Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot.
Hey y'all, welcome to the 51st episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. So I wasn't quite able to put out a weekly podcast in April as I had wanted, but it's been kind of a challenge with everything else going on. I just released some new products in the apothecary. I'm working on a lot of harm reduction herbal medicine that I'm going to be sending to some syringe exchanges and harm reduction programs, including Hatcher in Eureka, where I started the free herbal clinic 2 years ago. And finishing up with some tarot clients. By the time this episode comes out, my schedule for May will be up and you'll be able to book a reading. I'm really offering only a few slots next month. And then I have my Plant Witch apprenticeship course, and we're creating so much amazing content that we've been sharing a lot on Patreon and with each other. And actually, it's not an apprenticeship course anymore, I'm calling it a mentorship course. So all of this has been there's been a lot of work, as well as tending to my own emotions and ushering myself through these times in a way that feels compassionate and healing, and dealing kind of with my own spiritual existential crisis of sorts, and trying to look at this as an opportunity for growth and healing and not for self-destruction, which is, as a very Plutonian person, a tendency. So today's conversation is with the amazing Nicole Rose, who runs Solidarity Apothecary. Check her work out on Instagram at Solidarity Apothecary. And for this podcast episode, I was able to donate the donation that I usually use to pay the interviewees to the COVID-19 Herbal Solidarity with Herbalists Without Borders that Nicole is working on. So thanks to everybody who's a patron for helping support this work and also for helping me to make these donations to these really important projects. I will put a link in the show notes for you if you would like to make a donation to getting herbal medicine to Calais, the region in France where there is a refugee crisis that Nicole talks about a little bit in this episode. So check that out. And if you want access to a lot of extra content and a 20% apothecary discount for as low as $5 a month, you can go to patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. I can't even say how grateful I am for the support in these times. It means everything when people choose to support the podcast and subscribe to the Patreon. So www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch helps support this work and gets you lots of extra content. So I'll put a link in the show notes for you to check out the apothecary, book a tarot reading, join the Patreon, and also make a donation to the Herbal Solidarity with Herbalists Without Borders. And I'll also include the links for you to check out more of Nicole's work. If you join the Patreon just in the last week, I guess we're in the last week of April. So if you join before May 1st, you can enter to win a book by Nicole Rose that she talks about, two books actually. One of them is Overcoming Burnout, which is really amazing and helpful, and then The Prisoner's Herbal, which you can actually get from her if you want to send it to someone that you know who's incarcerated. You can actually contact her directly about getting one, but also I have the ability to send these out to people who show their support of the podcast and its sustainability. If you enjoy the podcast, remember to rate and review on iTunes. 5 stars is super helpful and amazing. You can take a screenshot and share it on Instagram or whatever social media you're using. Podcasts are, especially this little DIY podcast, super low budget. We really depend on your support for our continued success. So I want to thank everyone for showing up and listening. And especially thank you to the people that are on the Patreon who are helping to sustain the work. So I hope you enjoy this conversation today with Nicole Rose. I'm here today with Nicole Rose from Solidarity Apothecary. Nicole, welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So you do a lot of really important work with providing herbal mutual aid to folks who have been incarcerated and affected by late capitalism. For folks that aren't aware of what you do, do you want to kind of give a summary of some of the stuff you've been working on?
Sure. So I have a project called the Solidarity Apothecary, and its kind of mission is to materially support revolutionary struggles and communities with plant medicines to strengthen collective autonomy, self-defense, and resilience to climate change, capitalism, and state violence. So that's the blurb. But in reality, how that looks is I support people experiencing state repression, so folks on trial, folks getting out of prison. So I send them kind of like care packages of herbal medicine, like immune support during stressful court cases, and obviously kind of like stress and nervous system support. So I've been doing that informally for quite a few years, but I kind of formalized it into a project the last 2 years. And I also make medicines for a project called Herbalists Without Borders. And we go to Calais in northern France 1 week a month, and we do kind of like herbal healthcare and first aid with refugees and migrants living in the region. So we see about 500 people each trip, different upper respiratory conditions, injuries from police violence, all sorts of stuff. So I go there as like a kind of student herbalist. And I also have created a book called The Prisoner's Herbal, and I've been trying to get that, with a lot of help from amazing prisoner book projects around the world, into prisoners. So I think we've sent about 700 copies now into people who are currently in prison. And yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about the book a bit more, but that's kind of like an overview of what I've been doing.
Amazing. And I love following your work and seeing everything that you're doing. And I also like that you have like an approach where you're really talking about your own life and your relationships with the people that you work with and the people that you're connected to who are on the inside. And I think, yeah, your work is really inspiring and incredibly necessary in these times. So thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, because a lot of folks, you know, I feel like maybe you're the first person that I've had on the podcast that is from England. Or Britain, I guess. I don't know what you prefer to call it. But I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what is happening in Calais and in southern... Is it in northern France or southern France?
Northern France.
Yeah. Northern, okay. Yeah, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So Calais and Dunkirk, two port towns, and people have been going there for about, like, well over 20 years trying to get into the UK. So they... cross, like they try and get under lorries to cross like through the Channel Tunnel or on ferries, and they also take really dangerous trips across the channel in boats and dinghies, and obviously since the kind of, I hate the phrase refugee crisis because it kind of gives this impression that it's new and that I won't go into that, but basically people who've been trying to get to the UK from different parts of Africa, from Syria, Turkey, Afghanistan, Iran, they're all kind of experiencing this really horrific kind of journey across all these different borders, and the kind of UK is their final stop. So yeah, people, there's no kind of huge encampment anymore. Like, there was a place that they call the jungle, which was evicted a few years ago. And now most people are kind of sleeping rough in like tiny encampments, like on the edges of the city. And yeah, so we go there once a month with my van, and we do a kind of like pop-up clinic. So we're seeing like all different kinds of health conditions, as you'd imagine, from people living outside. There's loads of injuries from the police. Like, there's a real kind of situation of like creating this hostile environment, they call it, where it's like repeatedly taking people's tents, repeatedly evicting people. One guy I met, he wears glasses, and the police were doing a big eviction, and he said, oh, can I just get my glasses out from my tent? And they let him get his glasses out, and then they just like grabbed them off him and threw them on the floor and smashed them. So yeah, you see like injuries. Sorry, I should have given a trigger warning for this stuff, but yeah, it's pretty gnarly, and everything with the coronavirus now is just escalating the situation, right? Because there's no sanitation, there's no feasibility for people to self-isolate, and the French state are trying to put people in what they're calling like containment camps, which sounds horrifying and probably will be horrifying for people. They're saying it's things like about, you know, old hotels, but most people are too scared to go because they think that it's going to end with them being deported. But a lot of the agencies working in the field there like aren't delivering anymore. Like, they're not giving food out or distributing tents and stuff. So yeah, it's like really horrific.
Wow. Yeah. That's really horrible. And I think it's important, you know, to talk about these issues. Obviously, like, we need to talk about state sanctioned violence and police repression and the prison industrial complex all the time. But I think, like, especially, I feel like for me, because I'm from the so-called United States, and we know, we talk a lot about the border crisis that we're dealing with here, which, again, like, the word crisis, I want to say that, like, it's a crisis because it's a humanitarian crisis, and it's government suppression and abuse. And we know that a lot of immigration happens because of globalization and neoliberalism and things like NAFTA in the United States. So, like, I appreciate hearing your perspective about what's happening in the UK, because I feel like a lot of folks in the States, especially like white Americans, we tend to like glamorize sometimes Europe and talk about like how much better things are over there, because, you know, we lack socialized healthcare, for example. But it's important, I think, that we recognize like violence against immigrants is something that's happening globally in all parts of the world, and it is a part of colonialism and a part of state repression.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And everyone you meet, you know, like, it's because of British wars abroad. And, you know, we chat to people during at the clinic, like, who talk to us about that. And it's, yeah, it's a really weird place, because people somehow often put the UK on the pedestal. They're like, oh, in France, like, the cops are really awful, but like the UK will be better. And your heart sinks, because obviously, you know, we have detention centres here. We also have this hostile environment strategy. So, yeah, it's kind of difficult to kind of, you know, you don't want to like pop someone's hope, if you know what I mean. But then it's so hard to be realistic about what it's really like in the UK. Yeah, but it's very challenging territory for people.
Yeah. So what are some of the, and I really want to talk about, because full disclosure, y'all, we recorded this interview a couple of months ago, and then I didn't download it in time, which is the third time this has happened. And it was during a Mercury retrograde. So my bad, learning experience. But anyway, I, like, since then, we've had a lot of changes globally with COVID-19. So I definitely hear like how that's affected, you know, what you're offering, like the services that you provide in your communities. But I'm curious, like, in general, what are some of the, you know, remedies and some of the needs that are, that you're helping to support with herbs?
Do you mean in Calais or you mean with the Solidarity Apothecary?
Yeah, either or. Yeah.
So in Calais, it's just kind of growing and growing, really. So we mostly have like things for coughs, colds and flu. So cough syrup, chest rub. We have a really great antimicrobial vinegar, a really strong mouthwash, because things like access to dental care are like near enough impossible for people. We also have like wound sprays with calendula and myrrh. We have an anti-itch spray, and we have like a variety of different creams, like antifungal creams and other creams, because there's a lot of skin complaints. So it's kind of, a lot. Like at the moment we're making 4,500 medicines, which is basically our whole winter's worth of medicine at once. Because we want to kind of go back to France and do like a kind of mass distribution of flu packs and kind of tweak our recipes a bit so they're a bit more preventative kind of immune support. So I'm feeling quite exhausted. It's like really, really like a big, I mean, I think herbalists everywhere, right? It's like bang, like everyone's just like full force into response mode. But in terms of people experiencing repression, again, it's similar, like in terms of immune support, but it's also more things for the nervous system. So I have a blend, for example, that I call the Braveheart blend, which is a infusion with glycerin with rose, hawthorn and lemon balm. And it's very cooling. And I find that a lot of organizer folks are often quite kind of, you know, like type A, kind of very driven, hot people. And I've just experimented over a long time and I found that this blend is just like, you know, the lemon balm supports with the digestion. So that really helps because that's often how everyone like manifests stress. And different tea blends again with other kind of more sedative nervines like Skullcap. But again, it's like a mixture and really dependent on people's needs. That's what drives it.
So do you find yourself, and I know, like you said, it depends on people's needs. Are there different needs? You can't, like we talked about this last time, you're not able to actually like give medicine to folks that are incarcerated, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's impossible.
So yeah, that's why you made the book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So do you want to talk about the book? And I have a couple copies that I'm going to be doing a giveaway for. And I have, you know, I've been reading your book on burnout, which is really amazing. And I think it's really amazing to me that you do so much. And I can't believe you said more than 4,000, you're preparing like more than 4,000 medicines with Herbalists Without Borders.
Yeah, it's a group effort.
Yeah. Wow. So on top of that, you like published these two books. Do you want to talk a little bit about those?
At once. Oh no.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Did you hear the last question?
Was it about them making lots of medicine?
Oh, no. I was wondering, if you want to tell us a little bit about your process and, like, what inspired you to create these books.
Sure. So a lot of my friends are like, oh, Nicole, like, how did you write two books in, like, a few months? But actually, I started working on the Prisoner's Hub when I was in prison. So I did a 3.5-year sentence when I was 21 and learned about herbalism in prison with a distance learning course and worked in the prison gardens. And that for me was like my absolute first experience of gardening and plants. And yeah, it was so life changing. And in prison, there's like such extreme medical neglect. I mean, I was fortunate back then. I didn't have any kind of chronic health issues. But in recent years, my best friend Sam in prison has been struggling with cancer, and it's been really horrific, like fighting for her to have treatment. She's had lots of surgery now. But anyway, that's another long story. But I wanted to produce a resource where people could not only be inspired and connected to plant medicine, but they could really tangibly have stuff listed in there that they could try. So even for prisoners that don't have access to gardens or courtyards. I mean, I say gardens, it's like a triangle of grass, you know, with like weeds growing up. But even for people that don't have access to that, like lots of prisons, it's still possible to get basic like herbs and spices, or, you know, salt and pepper, things like that, and how we can use those kind of medicinally. So yeah, and I just was fed up with, I don't know what it's like. I think it's a bit more diverse potentially in the US, but in the UK, like, herbalism is so middle class. Like, it's so white, middle class, kind of like, I don't know. And I just, people forget that there's millions of people in prison around the world that are completely excluded from things, including herbalism. And so the book is as much, it is like mostly written for prisoners, but it's also written for like the herbal movement and people interested in herbs, because I think it just reminds them, like, hello, like, state violence, racism, like, all this shit's going on that you're like not thinking about. So yeah, it's kind of hopefully serving that kind of radicalizing function in the herbal community too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. And I think it definitely, there is an element of herbalism that I think is very privileged in the US as well. But what I'm hoping is that as people recognize a need for collective care, that more and more herbalists and plant people will be doing more mutual aid work with their herbalism, and more pay what you can formulas, more education, which I feel like has been happening, especially like in the last month, because we are dealing with the COVID-19 outbreak / pandemic. So really, I'm curious to hear, because like I was thinking about it when you were talking about your book and like making these, you know, educating folks that are incarcerated on these formulas that can be accessible to them in the situation that they're living in. And I wanted to, it kind of reminded me of like this movement towards like kitchen witchery right now and kitchen herbalism that people are talking about to encourage folks who, you know, don't have an extensive medical herbalism background to still be able to do some preventative work on their health with things that they might have around the house. So yeah, I guess, is it for you, how has this changed your work, I guess, like the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, so I think it's been a really interesting, like, personal test for me of kind of trying to apply the lessons from the burnout book, because you know, it's like stretching my capacity so much. But I think I'm trying to take it day by day, and at the moment I'm focusing on the medicines for Calais, and I've been building a directory on my website called the Herbalist Mutual Aid Directory, which has got contributions from herbalists all over the world that are offering kind of free or sliding scale resources, whether that's like one-to-one consultations or care packages. So yeah, I've been coordinating that kind of digitally, but my goal really after we've got all the medicine out to Calais is to focus on stuff locally and trying to kind of, you know, like, I wanted to do the directory so that people could get in touch with their local herbalist, because like I can make like a shit ton of stuff and post it to people, but like what's more radical is like people building relationships, right? And those herbalists like getting in touch with local community groups, like, you know, like homeless groups, domestic violence projects, and actually building those relationships. Like, I don't want to be like the node in this network, if that makes sense. So my goal after this Calais work is to, yeah, to really focus on kind of my local relationships more. And the local, I do mean like UK, but I would like to focus on like more of my like immediate area. And the other thing I've been doing was working with a couple of people on a kind of self-care guide for prisoners. And they made it like specifically for people in California, and it's like adapted to what can be ordered in that particular prison system. But I'd like to be able to kind of edit that and adapt it for other places. And the priority is getting more of the prisoners' herbals inside. And then kind of just beyond herbalism, like, again, this is like another test of my mental and physical health, is also doing a lot of prisoner support work right now, in terms of like agitation. You know, like countries all over the world are releasing prisoners in the absolute thousands, and the UK just like isn't doing it, and our justice minister like actively looking for like new places to become prisons so that they can just like kind of like spread the prisoners out more rather than letting them out. And we've already had 3 prisoner deaths here, and yeah, so it's kind of like interesting that like, yeah, everything that I've been kind of ever wanting to do with herbalism is now just like bang in like one moment, just like, okay, now, you know. So it's,
yeah, kind
of exciting, but also like, phew, it's really a lot. Yeah,
it is a lot. Yeah. And I think I love, yeah, again, like, I love your work. I think it's really inspiring, and like, what you and a lot of other herbalists are doing should be models for all herbalists right now. And it is weird, because I know, like, for me, when I got into folk herbalism, and lemon balm was my first, the plant that like initiated me. So I love that you were talking about that. Yeah, it was from the beginning like an interest that came about from doing like collective anarchist organizing and being like living in a punk house and like believing that the government was going to collapse. And that was like 15 years ago. And it's really weird to be in this position now, but it feels like I continually am like so thankful that I found plant medicine. I still have so much to learn. As you know, because there's endless things to learn. But for me personally, I think, like, you know, the amount that plant medicine can build us up and create resilience and patience and stability in times that are incredibly chaotic. And when we are being called to serve our communities that have less access than we do, it's just, yeah, plants are like a goddess send, really.
Yeah.
So did you, when you said 3 prisoners have died, did you mean of COVID-19?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how is this affecting your life right now?
So yeah, I'm very worried about my close friends in prison. One of them's actually been sick. His neighbor got tested positive, but he got tested negative. And one of my other friends, Sam, the one with cancer, has been told she still has to go to hospital for biopsies because her kind of cancer's come back recently. So yeah, that's all very like difficult. And annoyingly, I'm kind of like quarantined away from my family because I came back from Calais and I actually got sick for a week. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I haven't been tested, if it was COVID-19, but some of the kind of presentation seemed suspicious, but I was seeing like 400 people in Calais with coughs and colds. So like, who knows what I kind of picked up. But yeah. And it obviously, you know, just like everyone, it's like affecting, being able to see friends and family and things. I'm very fortunate that I'm able to work from home with my paid work. So I haven't had that livelihood hit that most of my friends have. And now that prison visits have been stopped, it's like, wow, I've got like an extra £300 a month that I can, you know, give to people that need it. So that's like pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So I wanted to, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, your creation of the Prisoner's Herbal and how that was really informed by your own experience of being incarcerated. The book that you wrote about burnout, did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So they were both kind of published at the same time, and the burnout book is a collection of blogs. So in 2016 I got really sick, was in and out of hospital with like chronic rib pain and chest pain, and if the virus had hit then I would have been absolutely terrified. And I started blogging about my experiences and how I didn't want to drop out of kind of organizing or kind of struggles for liberation. And I wanted to like address challenges in my collective. So kind of looking at how, looking at ableism and gender and like different dynamics within groups, and also processing grief and trauma and everything else. And yeah, the kind of blogs like really, it's weird saying went viral now after this virus stuff, but yeah, they went viral. And yeah, we've put them into a book. And yeah, again, it's like another thing I really need to crack on with is kind of promoting it, because I do feel like a lot of what's in there is relevant right now. You know, like, it's really interesting with this pandemic. It's like, I don't know, like, caring work that I've done for like my entire life is now suddenly like really politically sexy, if that makes sense. And it's like, yeah. Oh, you know, I've been like driving food to my mates' houses who have chronic illnesses for like forever, and supporting people with mental health issues forever. And then it's just like, yeah, it's groups that kind of excluded me because I wasn't able to participate with my illness and now just like effortlessly moving to like Zoom and Skype and shit. And it's like, couldn't you have done this before? And I know like other people with disabilities and kind of invisible chronic illnesses are also kind of, you know, like saying this now as well, of like, wow, this mutual aid organizing is happening, but we're still being excluded from it. And it's, yeah, it's kind of, why are we now worth kind of attention, if that makes sense, of like, look after your neighbors that like, you know, are like immune compromised. And it's like, yeah, we should have been looking after them the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
Or like, or that it's still in this kind of weird paternalistic way of like, oh, I'm this like vulnerable person with a chronic illness, and like, you're all these like heroic people doing all this shit for me. And it's just, yeah, it drives me nuts. But a friend, Amani, who will hopefully listen to this, who's amazing, who's struggled with chronic illness for a lot longer than I have. She, yeah, we're hopefully going to be kind of collaborating on some writing about this. And we're also putting together a colouring book with illustrations from the Prisoner's Herbal and some other like plant illustrations. And we're going to sell it on my site and get that sent to prisoners too, and to, and for anyone that wants to download it for free during the kind of lockdown time.
Awesome. Thank you for bringing up the piece about ableism that exists within kind of like newly forming mutual aid networks. I kind of want to like break that down a little bit more, because I have noticed a lot more discussions about how, you know, obviously capitalism is inherently racist, it's inherently transphobic, it's inherently fatphobic, it's inherently ableist. Like, we know it is very oppressive, like capitalism, and especially in neoliberal like times, capital, and you know, when we have like billionaires that are doing nothing right now, that have so much control over the market. I really am just curious, like, how you can expand on the ways that, and like, sorry if I'm putting you on the spot with like a really big question, but yeah, like the ways that ableism shows up in like mutual aid organizing.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I haven't been involved in the kind of newly formed mutual aid groups because of this like boundary need to do Calais work. But I do know that different people have been writing about it, so I don't want to speak for them, if that makes sense. But my kind of impression, yeah, my kind of loose impression from listening to them mostly is that, yeah, it's still challenging when a lot of the organizing is being done by very able-bodied people without much awareness of their kind of able-bodied privilege, and without much effort to exclude people who can't do the kind of like, you know, like the door drops or the like cooking or the grocery stuff. So it's kind of like, if you're the person with the chronic illness, like you feel like you're the person that's just like receiving all the time. And don't get me wrong, like you want to receive, like when I was sick, like I was desperate for my friends to like help me with cooking or to like visit me in hospital or whatever. But yeah, you also don't want to just be put in that box that's who you are, and you're just like this passive recipient for people's care. Like, you also want to get involved and do shit. And, you know, like, I wanted to, like, input into group decisions, even if I didn't have the energy to go to every meeting or every demo. Like, I wanted to be able to help edit text or design flyers or whatever. So it's kind of like, how do we value different types of labor? And how do we share power, even if we can't evenly share the division of labor in, like, a physical way? How can we share it in a kind of, like, how can we share it in general, right? So, like, everyone feels power and everyone can contribute and everyone feels included. And that's not, like, some weird thing that's been, like, gifted to you by some, like, generous, able person, like, able-bodied person. Do you know what I mean? Even the phrase able-bodied, yeah, like, really irritates me, but I can't think of a better one right now. But yeah, but actually in the Overcoming Burnout book, part of that writing project was I did a call out for people with chronic illnesses to share their experiences in kind of social movements. And I got emails from people all over the world and I kind of collated them in one blog. And then the second blog, it was their, like, actual advice of, like, what they needed, of how they could feel included. And it's literally just a list of bullet points. And yeah, and I know there's, like, other organizations that have been, like, organizing for this, about this stuff for, like, decades, right? Around disability justice and health justice and accessibility. And I think it feels like the virus is really bringing up stuff of, like, right, the time is now to talk about this, right? To talk about community care, to talk about mutual aid, to talk about prison abolition, you know, in, like, the blink of an eyelid, like, more prisoners are being released than, like, ever before. And we're actually, you know, like, in this really powerful kind of revolutionary situation here. But we need to be listening to people who've been talking about this shit for, like, a really long time, you know, not just because it's the flavor of the week now.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, thank you for all that. I think there's this kind of thing that I'm seeing people do where there's an expectation that things are going to, quote unquote, go back to normal after we quarantine for 2 months or whatever. And I'm really resistant to that because I want people to remember what normal is for many folks, for most folks in some way, but for many folks, like, to an extreme. And the idea of, like, we're going to go back to normal after this is not the reality. Like, we're not going to go back to normal. Like, things will be shifted permanently. Mm-hmm. In the global climate, in the economic sphere. And it is a time, yeah, I totally hear you. There's, like, it's exciting because there's some potential for growth, but then also, you know, like, I was looking at something this morning on social media where, you know, people have been posting things and it's usually middle class and upper class white people, things like, this is so exciting, the environment's getting cleaned up and we're like cooking for ourselves and starting gardens. And there's a part of me that's really excited about all the people that are starting gardens. But I think it's really privileged to only see that point, to only see that, because we, you know, even if we do have this hopefully collective change that in the end will bring us collectively to a better place and a more equitable place, there is going to be a lot of sickness and death on the way to that and a lot more state repression. So it's not fair to, like, celebrate that because you're maybe not one of the people that isn't going to be the most strongly affected.
Yeah, completely. This has also been, like, whew. Yeah, irritating me so much. And actually, like, before the kind of lockdown-esque stuff was happening, like, it was just unbearable, like, the ableism around people just like, oh, like, the virus is nothing. It's just like the flu and la la la. And it's like, okay, so my mates will just die, will they? And, like, old people can just die. And I feel like it took a while here to catch on to, like, actually some people are not disposable. Mm-hmm. And just like so much like new age kind of shit, isn't there, around blah blah blah, this is meant to be blah blah blah. And it's, yeah, like with my day job with Corporate Watch, we've just started a series called like Corona Capitalism, which is like talking about how kind of capitalism has like created the virus in lots of ways due to like industrial agriculture and kind of globalization and stuff, but also how it's going to impact certain people more than others. And I feel like we do need like lots of good narratives that can kind of counter all the bullshit, while at the same time like still holding on to that like spiritual need to process what's going on, right? And to to find tools like astrology and stuff to help explain it. Like, I think that stuff's very grounding and really helps. It is hard when I'm literally living with this daily worry that my friends are going to die in prison, and people are like complaining they're like bored of like watching Netflix or something, and I'm just like, leave me alone.
This is a big opportunity, I think, for everyone to check themselves and check their resources and their privilege, and just be aware of how people behave and like where your allegiances are. I think like we are all being really tested about where our allegiances are, because like a lot of people I know who are small business owners, like, we're terrified because as Amazon continues to grow and balloon and hemorrhage out of control, a lot of small business owners are going to see the effects of loss of income. But at the same time, there's always someone that's more affected than you. And I think it's important for you to mention, we have to take time to process. This is a grieving process for everyone. For 99% of people, I think there's like something to be grieve in this process. But at the same time, being bored that you can't leave the house and you can't like go to a party and you have to cancel something that you're planning to do, that really sucks. Like, it does really suck, but like, put it in perspective, because there are people that will die.
It's really interesting with the self-isolation stuff, because I obviously feel like very adapted to that because of prison, but it's really interesting, like, almost having this like global exposure to people, that like how it feels to have like movement restricted. And like, I don't know, there's just something in that for me of like, wow, will people be a lot more supportive of like prisoners now after this, because they felt like, because most people, like, if they're white or whatever, like, don't have any restriction on their movement, right, in terms of like leaving the house or whatever. So it's like, it's kind of be interesting to see the kind of long-term repercussions on people's consciousness after these experiences.
I'm hoping that there will be. I'm hoping that people will allow themselves to transform and evolve from this experience, and to open their hearts up and create empathy, and utilize that empathy to create systemic change, is my hope. So to circle back around, like, I wanted to go back to your Overcoming Burnout book, because I don't know, I mean, this is another big question, but for folks that are doing, because I'm like questioning this for myself too. It's like, for folks that are doing a lot of work for their community, mutual aid work, what do you think some of the good, big steps people can take in these times towards striking a balance between like caring for themselves and caring for others without burnout, without over, because we can't, it's like, we can't have the helpers be burning out. Do you have suggestions around that or thoughts?
Well, yeah, that's a really important question. I think it's a sensation of like problematic drivers for me burning out were things like unprocessed trauma, unprocessed grief, very poor boundaries, like really ingrained workaholism. So I feel like, and I know that those are experiences shared by like huge amounts of organizers. So I think it's kind of like that interesting like neuroplasticity between getting a lot of self-worth from caring for other people, but also being like very grounded in our bodies and knowing our limits and like being able to kind of meet our own needs. So like, I know like it's interesting with herbalists because a lot of people are like sending herbs like left, right and center, and other herbalists are actually just doing things like, you know, a tea every afternoon that's on Instagram. Like, here's us drinking this tea. Here's this like meditation or whatever. And maybe like pre-burnout Nicole would have been like, oh, it's not real work, da da da. But like, now I'm a bit older and wiser, it's like, yeah, shit, like taking care of ourselves is really important. And yeah, I think, yeah, just finding some way to connect in with our bodies. I know that sounds like really hippie-ish, but just like, yeah, what is dangerous is when you can't feel how exhausted you are and you can't feel like that you're on the edge of just like complete physical breakdown. So like, I think just having some kind of practice of daily check-in of like, you know, how am I doing? And especially with how much like how traumatizing this is for everyone, it's like we really need like this kind of daily daily moment to be like, okay, what can or I can't do today, right? Like some days I can do loads of prisoner support and letters and be promoting action alerts on the internet, and other days I'm just like, I can't go there, like I need to be in the garden, I need to do the medicine making today. And obviously memes, you know, like I've just been sending memes to friends like left, right and center, and I think they're just like the best collective tool for our mental health.
Yeah And I think it's true. It's like, I remember in our last conversation, you were like, I've got four planets in Capricorn or something like that. And yeah, I have like four planets in Capricorn also, with my moon and sun. And there is a tendency, I think, to be like, oh, you're doing that, that's not enough, like you need to do more, like not only towards other people but about yourself. And that's, I mean, it is inherently ableist to feel like that, you know. So that's like something I've been breaking down in my own process, like when I'm giving myself a hard time for like not doing more, I remember that that is an you know, even though I'm talking about doing more for the collective, it, that thinking is an extension of capitalism, and it's, which is an extension of ableism as well. And it's, there's a little bit of codependency in it too, because like, you know, you can't, you know, individually we cannot change the world, we can put in an effort and make things happen, but you know, we can only do so much as individuals. So yeah, our health and wellness is really important. And yeah, I mean, like you probably know, like overworking yourself when you're young and like overinvesting yourself can lead to chronic health issues when you're older as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. So are you still taking folks for your mutual aid network?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. All herbalists can submit their little profiles on the site, and I just get an email notification and then I can click approve. So the more people in that directory, the better, but also just the more people that know about it. Like it's a bit of a worry. Is it just herbalists that know about this? Like we need people that are really needing like herbal support, and that's a way for them to find a practitioner that can offer free or sliding scale plant medicines. So yeah, so just promoting it in general is really valuable.
Mm-hmm. So if folks want to like check out your work, learn more from you, or like support you in some way, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
So it's all on my website, solidarityapothecary.org, and I'm also on Instagram at solidarity.apothecary. All my books and stuff are on my website. Feel free to drop me an email. I'm sorry that I'm a little bit terrible at emails these days. But I'm doing my best. So those are the best places. And we're about to ship another 1,000 books to the US. So if you're part of a prisoner books project, or you have a friend or family member in prison and you'd like them to have a free copy of the book, please contact me and we can get them inside.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me today. And thank you again for all the really important work that you're doing in the world.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. And yeah, you're doing amazing too. Definitely. Oh,
thank you. Listening to the Rise Up
Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.